Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for tuning in today. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit, health, and how that allows us to play a bigger game and make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. Due to the sensitive nature of today's show, I want to start by saying the thoughts and opinions shared on this show are solely those of the host, me, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KDNK Community Radio. Today, we're taking a look at a set of circumstances that occurred on Christmas Eve in Carbondale that ended in the arrest of Michael Francisco, a longtime resident of Carbondale. Michael is a beloved DJ on KDNK. He's volunteered at the high school gardens. He's a florist at the Aspen City Market and is a past employee of the Carbondale City Market where the incident occurred. Michael is also Black. We're specifically looking at how we as community members can respond to injustices in our community in a way that allows for, and these are Michael's wishes, compassion, greater connection and understanding, and solutions that allow for a greater expression of love. Joining me for this conversation are Carbondale residents Nikki Beinstein and April Crow Spaulding. Thanks so much, ladies, for joining me. Are you there?
I'm here. This is April.
Yeah.
Great. Both of you are thoughtful, loving, engaged people, and you both have been in contact with Michael directly. Nikki, I thought I'd start with you since you were there at City Market on Christmas Eve and witnessed what happened. Can you share what you saw and how it made you feel?
Well, basically, I saw a man who I didn't know on the ground. There were two policemen around him, and I saw things that were outside of his pockets, and they were talking to him, and I just felt that something wasn't right. I didn't know why that had happened. I had seen Michael as he came to the self-checkout, and then I kind of passed. I noticed him, and then I passed and went to get some things for Christmas Eve, and when I turned around in the self-checkout area, I saw that he was, you know, on the ground, and other people were looking, but no one was talking to one another. And it just was very disconcerting, but again, I tried to not make any assumptions about why he was there.
Got it. And then since then, we've found out more about what's going on. April, you are also a DJ at KDNK, and you've been a friend of Michael's for some time now, but he never mentioned this, and you hadn't heard about it until you saw the article in the paper just a week ago. Is that right?
That's right. I had spoken with Michael a couple of times about completely different things in our lives, and I had not heard anything about it. It had not been on any radar. I hadn't seen any posts about it. And when I saw that in the paper last Thursday, I mean, oh my gosh, my emotions went from just raging red anger to crying my eyes out, because Michael is just such a dear, wonderful person. And not that this should happen to anybody, but the fact that I know him and know what his, you know, what his heart is, it broke mine to read that.
And were you
very upsetting?
Were you unsure of how to respond, like what there was to do about this?
You know, yeah, I had some, you know, knee-jerk reactions right away, like, oh, this is not going to happen to Michael. This is not going to go on in my town where I live. You know, we're gonna organize right now and do something. I want to boycott City Market. And I mean, I had quite a few things running through my head, which, you know, after thinking, and I was able to speak with Michael the next day, which would have been last Friday, and it was amazing how much of it, like, he didn't actually know about,
yeah.
But maybe we'll get into that later. So, yeah, my reaction was I did call City Market corporate office, and I did contact his lawyer. Of course, talked to Michael. I'm trying to think who else I called. You know, I've written a letter to Soper's son. You know, and I'm still in the process of, I mean, trying to get a hold of people to shine a light on this incident,
right.
What happened.
And Nikki, what were your what were the actions that you took after having witnessed this?
Well, I did speak to the front manager there, who was kind of blocking off traffic, and I asked her, was this justified? Because I felt I had to say something. And she said, yes, I can't tell you what it is, but it is justified. And at that point, I didn't feel like there was anything I could do. I reached out to a friend by text who said, reminded me, look, you don't really know what the story is here. Don't jump to any conclusions. So I, you know, went to check out my groceries. I went outside, saw the police officers, and then I drove around for a little bit because I was very upset.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure what I should do, you know, with these feelings. Because, again, I mean, I had no knowledge of why that had happened. I thought, well, maybe, you know, they found him there from something else that wasn't even related to the grocery store. But I spent a couple of days really thinking about, what am I going to do with this information or what I saw? Because it was Christmas Eve, and I guess the greatest vehicle that I had at the time was to post something on Facebook, and I waited for 2 days after Christmas to do that and just try to relate what I had seen, including the photos that I had taken from a distance, as objectively as possible. I wanted to really be as neutral as, you know, a human can be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all have our biases. And in that way, you know, was able to kind of work through some of these feelings, I guess, or it was interesting to see the feedback of the people who, you know, are my friends on Facebook. And one thing led to another, and one of those friends put me in touch with Michael, and then we were able to have several conversations since then, really talking about what happened, but other things, and kind of getting to know each other better, I guess.
Right. What were your first impressions of Michael?
I mean, when I spoke to him on the
yeah.
phone, I mean, such a sweet, loving person. We had a lot of philosophical conversations, which I'm prone to do and he's prone to do. And so we kind of went in that direction. I mean, I think, you know, he's looking for the highest good, and he
yeah.
really wants everyone to love each other and care about each other, and that's his religion too. And I really connected with that. And, you know, I tend to be a trusting person, so I just really tried to read his energy, and I could only feel very positive things about him as a person. And so I ended up meeting up with him at his first hearing. And so I met him in person and sat next to him, and only have felt, you know, positive things about him as a human.
So I feel like it's important just to kind of go over what we know. I mean, what was actually reported in our local paper, the Soper Sun, that on Christmas Eve, an employee at the City Market gas station felt uncomfortable with Michael, and this person called her supervisor at City Market. And the article also states, I think it's worth saying this, that this person had previously reported being uncomfortable around another Black person. So the article also says that the supervisor requested to the chief of police, who happened to be in the store off duty, to have Michael leave and not to instigate an arrest. And the chief was off duty and called for two police officers to respond. If you guys feel like I'm getting this right so far?
It sounds right. That's
yes.
about it.
So the goal was for him to leave, but we still don't understand why, because he wasn't being violent or aggressive, and he actually was already leaving by the time police officers arrived. Is that right? He was just about finishing up with his checking out his groceries.
That's exactly right. What the article and Michael himself said today. That he was leaving. One of the things that I felt like was interesting is that he told us that he was not even aware of what the circumstance of what was going on around him at the time. He was just doing his thing and checking out.
So when the officers approached him inside the store and asked for his ID, apparently he responded with some salty language, but not violent or aggressive, and asked to know what was going on. And that resulted in him being arrested. So that's pretty much what we know. And, you know, now it's up to us to figure out, you know, what feels like a positive way of responding. You know, what will result in the greatest good for the community, for interactions with that are difficult in the future, with police and others, people in positions of management. That's kind of what we're looking at. And, you know, I'm wondering if either of you have thoughts about that you'd like to share.
Well, you want to go ahead, Nikki?
Okay, sorry. I feel like we have to look at this situation in its singularity and look at all the pieces of it. And when you put all the pieces together, it doesn't make sense. It's just, you know, we haven't seen all the evidence. There is evidence that I requested from the police department. Anybody can request information about any arrest, which I learned during this experience, but only once the case is closed. So it's still open. So, you know, I haven't seen the video of what happened at the gas station. We read a little bit about it in the paper, something that he's pointing a finger, but it sounds like there's more of a story that we don't know about. But from all the pieces that we do know, it just seems that he was really treated disrespectfully. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key here, is that why was that allowed to speak to him in such a manner, to make such assumptions about him, to treat him with disrespect, and then also not expect him to get upset when he was approached. I mean, he was, you know, out of the blue, having no idea that he had done anything to make anybody uncomfortable, and he was approached a certain way, asking, you know, they asked for his ID, and so I think anybody who's asked for their ID and had no idea why, and they were just getting their groceries and leaving and getting upset about it, that just makes, that's how, you know, most people react. And so I think moving forward, the key is how do we treat each other with respect? How do we, even when it's an authority figure, you know, how can there be education around communication and communication styles and trying to not be as biased as possible, and when we are, being aware of that and looking at each person for who they are. We're all our own unique selves, and not to just kind of have this blanket assumption. So I think moving forward, you know, education is a key. And then when mistakes have been made, that we apologize for those mistakes, and that mistakes are not weaknesses when we admit them. It actually shows that we're strong when we admit that we've done something that wasn't right, and then we try to remedy it.
Beautiful.
So for me, those are some actions about moving forward in a positive way.
April, is there anything you want to say about what happened and what you felt like could have been done better, or what you'd like to see?
I definitely feel like there was a breakdown on many levels. You know, the original person that in the gas station that accused him of making her feel uncomfortable, that person, obviously, you know, you can't discount it when somebody feels uncomfortable, regardless of whatever reason. But that person should have been managed by that first manager that they spoke with. Mm. That manager should have taken it upon themselves to find out why that person felt, you know, accosted, or however you want to put it, why they felt uncomfortable. And at that point, you know, don't discount their feelings, but say, well, what happened? okay, let's go see what he's doing now. Is he being disruptive? Is he being menacing?
Is there an imminent threat?
I feel like, is there an imminent threat? And it sounds like it was just jumped straight to, hey, chief of police is here. Hey, take care of this guy. And as we spoke with Michael, he said that he had acknowledged and waved or nodded at the general manager because he knew him. He's worked in that store. He has a family member that currently works in that store. But when all of this happened and he asked for the manager, the general manager, the manager on duty to come over and, you know, vouch for him, however you want to say it, his words were that he pleaded for that manager to come over, and they denied that. The police and that front-end manager, that should have stopped right there. They should not have, it sounds like it should not have escalated from that point. Apparently there had been a run-in a few months prior when he was actually working at that store on an overnight shift when the store first opened, and he was followed in by Carbondale police and asked why he was there, and he said he was there to work, and it, you know, why are you asking? And their reply was, oh, well, we've had, you know, response from the managers saying that people are just hanging out here. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I'm here to work.
Yeah.
So this wasn't the first incident on Christmas Eve that he had been approached by police in City Market here in Carbondale.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it just snowballed in a way that should never have happened,
right,
in my opinion. Of course, we don't know, you know, when it comes out in court. But, I mean, it just sounds like they need to own up to the fact that maybe things got out of control.
Yeah. Well, let me just break in here for just a moment and say this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KD&K. Today I'm talking with April Crow Spalding and Nikki Beinstein about how we respond to injustice in our communities. And, you know, I wanted to share that one of the best examples of positive solutions being generated from a similar incident, and maybe you remember the two young Black entrepreneurs who were handcuffed by police, also arrested in a Starbucks in Philadelphia in 2018. A Starbucks employee also felt uncomfortable by the presence of these two men who were waiting for a meeting and hadn't purchased anything yet, and she called 911 to summon police. So here's what resulted from that incident. The manager of the Starbucks either resigned or was fired. The police chief, who had previously maintained that officers did nothing wrong, apologized to the man, saying, quote, that he'd played a significant role in making the situation worse. And maybe the most positive thing that occurred was a national apology tour by Starbucks leadership. And it closed its stores nationwide on May 29th of 2018, less than 2 months after the incident, for a racial bias training for its 175,000 employees. You know, and here's what one of the men who was arrested said after the incident. You go from being someone who's just trying to be an entrepreneur, having your own dreams and aspirations, and then this happens. How do you handle it? Do you stand up? Do you fight? Do you sit down and just watch everyone else fight for you? Do you let it slide like we let everything else slide with injustice? I just feel like those are questions for all of us. How can we stand up in ways that are not just about accountability, but that actually build each other up, that actually create systemic change? And I know you guys have shared some of that, but how do you feel like we can build each other up in this moment?
Well, as once again, Michael has pointed out that the word community broken down means common unity, and the common unity can't happen. You cannot become a community without having the deeds and the acts in your community come from love. And that doesn't seem to be happening right now here in Carbondale. There, as I mentioned, I personally feel like there was a breakdown on many levels here, and which just snowballed. But the fact that you think of common unity, I think that we can't, like you said, that can't be a, we cannot be a community without love. And Michael is a Rastafarian, which is a religion. I feel like he was disrespected in that way. They took off his headpiece and rifled through his hair when he explained that that was part of his religion, to have that covered. They tried to kind of put it back on or something, but that's not the first time in this, in our town, that that kind of thing has happened. And I can't even imagine having a yarmulke pulled off or a crucifix around someone's neck yanked off and be told that, well, this looks like a weapon. You know, they need to have some understanding that not everybody comes from the same cloth, and we have mm-hmm. different ideas on things. So I think it's very, very important, and that is what needs to happen here, is some sensitivity training.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Someone I've been following lately is Rachel Ricketts. I really recommend her, you know, podcasts and interviews that I've seen on YouTube. She's a racial justice educator and author of a book called Do Better. And she talks about, you know, the need for, you know, good people to get it right. And sometimes that stops us from getting involved. And to specifically, she talks about spiritual activism and the need to do the inner work to address our unconscious bias. And I wonder if, Nikki, if there's any inner work that this whole experience has spurred for you.
I definitely thought very deeply about all of this. And I think that one realization that I had was I felt like I had to do something. So
yeah.
I did what I was in my power to do. And what was amazing to me is that that's basically all I had to do. And then everything kind of fell into place. What I mean by that is, you know, there was another witness there who, unbeknownst to me, who knew Michael and connected him to a lawyer. And then the lawyer, I believe, reached out to the Soper Son to write a story and also set up a GoFundMe page. I didn't have to do all those things. I mean, I thought about, you know, I had a conversation with Michael after the hearing saying, I think you need representation. I gave him a name of a lawyer, but he ended up using somebody else. But I feel like just showing up, you know, is sometimes it's enough, because then other people come out of the woodwork and other people are supported, whether they know you or not. It just seems like the universe kind of rallies around good deeds and good acts, and that you don't have to be the superhero, and it doesn't have to be everybody knowing that you were a part of it or that you did anything. You know, no one needs any kind of glory. They just need to, I think, I mean, I'm speaking for myself too. I don't want to be pedantic, but that it's just that if you just stand up and kind of do the right thing, that all the other pieces can fall into place, and to have faith in that. And so I think more than my own inner workings, I think it's just the whole experience in, solidified my faith in the universe and how when we do the right thing or we do something that we believe is good, that we are supported in more ways than we could have imagined.
That's beautiful.
You know what this reminds me of is that children's book, Stone Soup, where everybody just brings something and adds it to the pot, and before you know it, everybody's fed. And that is exactly what's happening right now. And I know Michael says that he's not angry. Maybe he was the right person to shed light on this.
Yeah.
So that's amazing that he can say he's not angry. I find that amazing. And if everybody in this community could bring something to put in the pot, I think that it's gonna feed all of our souls.
That's a beautiful place to end. Thank you so much, April. And we do need to wrap up. I wanted to share that one of my past shows was a conversation with Roderick O'Connor. So if you Google Katie and Kay, Inner Game, you'll find past shows. And Roderick talks, he's a police officer with the Aspen Police Department. The Aspen Police Department, where community policing originated. And they've done a lot of good trainings, and he's shared some with me. One called Crisis Intervention Training, that's being hosted by the Glenwood Police Department in April. One called Our Community Listens at ourcommunitylistens.org. So those are some things to look at. Also listen to the show with Roderick O'Connor. And until next time, You know, thanks so much for listening today. If you have a question for any of us, you can join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. And yeah, until next time, let love guide you in all your responses. And join us at 5:30 in beloved community for a peace circle at 4th and Main. That's today at 5:30, just about a half hour from now. And hopefully we will see you there.
Can I add something quickly?
Yes.
That about the next hearing? Can I say that before it signs up? Okay. Just that the next hearing is on March 8th at the Carbondale City Hall at 4:30 p.m. And I think that's a really great way to show our support.
Great.
If anybody's interested in showing their support.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Gwen.
You bet.
Thank you. Thank you so much.